Call is now being recorded.
All right, Ed. So we'll go ahead and get started. You want to tell us a little bit about your military experience?
Sure. So I enlisted in the Army in 1981. I was going to college and ran out of food, money, and ideas all at the same time. And as a result, I thought, well, I'll be all I can be. And that was an era where Reagan had really started to pump up the military. And so I thought, well, this seems like a good idea. And I'd had some exposure and background to the military. So I thought, well, let's go do this. And I actually knew what I wanted to do. I was going to enlist, and I was going to become a Huey crew chief. That's exactly what I did. That's what I wanted to do. And so in that era, they let you pick not only your job, but your first duty station. And we chose Fort Hood, Texas. So that's what we did. I went and enlisted. And after AIT, my wife and I, it wasn't my wife at that point, but we'd planned to get married, moved to Fort Hood, Texas. And so that's where I started my career.
And you moved around quite a bit, just like most of us, right?
Yeah, from Fort Hood to Camp Casey, Korea. And at the end of my tour at Camp Casey, Korea, my enlistment was just about up, and I had a choice to re-enlist. And at that time, what was happening was many people were going back to Fort Hood or to Fort Campbell. They'd spend 9-10 months there, and then guess what? They'd come right back to Korea. I left for Korea when my oldest daughter was 6 weeks old. I thought, well, I don't really want to do that again, so how do I not do that? And so the Army gave me a chance to reenlist and go to Alaska, which was an OCONUS assignment with a 3-year duty overseas credit. So you were kind of locked in for 3 years. And so I said, well, gee, Alaska sounds cool. Let's go there. So that's what we did. And so we moved from Korea. I moved from Korea to Alaska. And then while we were there, that tour got extended to a 4-year tour. It was originally a 3, and then the Army stayed at 4. So I spent 4 years there. Then again, I was kind of having a good time, enjoying the work, and liked what I was doing, and had a chance to reenlist again. And thought, the Army said, well, how about you go to Fort Eustis? And I said, oh, okay, that's cool. I can go be an instructor or whatever. But when I got to Fort Eustis, they actually assigned me to a the general support aviation section. So I was running a platoon of Hueys that was supporting both the test pilot school and the general support aviation. So we provided VIP transport for Fort Eustis, Fort Story, Fort Lee, and Fort Monroe, and then, you know, kind of general edge of the Pentagon level support. So I was doing that, and had a great time doing that, and went to go reenlist again. And at that time, we wanted to go overseas and reenlisted for Germany. But in the meantime, the first Gulf War kicked off, and everybody got frozen. And so as opposed to going to the first Gulf War, we were busy at the test pilot school testing rotor erosion systems for rotor blades and trying to figure out how to keep dust from eating engines and everything else. I went down and did some port operations, loaded units on to support that. But, of course, it was quick. It was over pretty fast before anybody in those support positions got notified to go. And then we went and spent 6.5 years in Germany. After 6.5 years in Germany, relocated to the 3rd ACR at Fort Carson, Colorado, where I was a first sergeant of a UH-60 Blackhawk troop, and that's where I retired from.
And then you joined up with Deere, and you've been with Deere for, what, 14 and a half years?
I had kind of a strange – I'd just gotten back from a tour in Bosnia and was talking about retiring, and wife and I were on the phone chatting about what we might want to do, and I got home that night. We were sitting there talking some more about it. And there's a lot of those conversations when you start to figure out you're going to change career field. And we were watching TV, and we had lived in the Newport News, Williamsburg, Virginia area previously when I was at Fort Eustis, and a commercial came on for Colonial Williamsburg. And we said, well, if we don't stay here in Colorado, which we happen to really like, Virginia would be really cool too. Let's maybe consider that. And if it wasn't the very next day, I got a call from a previous commander of mine who was working for John Deere at that time and said, hey, I've got a guy here who wants to talk to you about a job. And I hadn't even put him on retirement paperwork yet, but we'd talked, and I told him I was thinking about retiring and contemplating that. And the general manager of a new factory had reached out to me and said, hey, I heard this guy, previous commander of mine talked about you, and I think maybe you'd be a good fit for some things we got going on. Why don't you give me a call? So I did. He said, hey, come fly out here next week. Come talk to us. So well, I'm not really looking for a job, but yeah, I'll come up to come talk to you, sure. And I said, so I went out, flew out, did 4 interviews in 2 days, a dinner, a lunch. And unlike what we do today, literally general manager and the operations managers asked me if I could wait around a few minutes. They came back with HR manager and offered me a job on the spot, which was really unusual. And I said, but this was like September. And I said, but I haven't even put my retirement paperwork in, and I wasn't planning to retire until next summer. I've got kids in high school. He says, oh, yeah, yeah, no problem. So they actually made me a job offer in September with a start date of sometime in June or July of the following year. So I went back, put in my retirement paperwork, said I've got a job, and she made kind of the plan to transition that following summer. So the last, unlike a lot of folks who have to struggle with figuring out what they're going to do next, I already had a job lined up before I even put my retirement paperwork in, which is really strange.
Very fortunate. You told me once that you were thinking about, like someone had asked you if you wanted to stick around and be a sergeant major. So how did you know that you wanted to get out?
Unlike the war of the last 14 years, I mean, we were gone, but we were training. We're doing, you know, the standard stuff that everybody does. So you're gone 45 days, 60 days, 6 months, done a couple trips to Bosnia. And at that point, it was kind of like, well, kids are all in high school, and it just felt like I was tired of being gone. And I think the family was tired of me being gone. And it wasn't gone, you know, excessive like it's been for a lot of folks in the last 14 years, but it was, you know, 45, 60 days, 3 months, 6 months, those kinds of things. And the other part was at that time, I was up for, you know, I would have gone, my records would have gone for the Sergeant Major Board had I stayed in at that point. I thought, oh, pretty good chance of making it. I had an advanced degree at that time. I had both my bachelor's and my master's. Had good NCER, so I thought, you know, that's probably in the scope of where I would go. But you had to go to the Sergeant Major Academy for a year at Fort Bliss, and then after that, you were subject to worldwide assignment. And I thought, I got my 3 kids in high school. Am I going to move them to Bliss for 1 year, or are they going to stay in Colorado? And then after that, am I back to career for 2 years? Because at that time, a Sergeant Major would have gone to a 2-year assignment for that kind of thing. And I just thought, you know, I'm not sure I want to put them through this at this point. They've all, you know, one was born in Texas, 2 were born in Alaska. They've lived all over the world. They're pretty traveled. But it was kind of like, one, I really liked being a first sergeant and being with troops. I mean, I was still occasionally crewing helicopters. I was still in flight status. So I was still doing missions with the unit, which is kind of unique and fun. So I got to do a lot of the fun stuff. But as a sergeant major, basically, when I was filling in for the sergeant major, I was going to meetings. And I thought, I don't know if I want to go to meetings the rest of my career. And so.
And then you got to work for John Deere?
Well, yeah. But, it was kind of one of those things where I thought it's maybe just not the right fit for me. So from a family standpoint, and did I want to do the next 3 years of uncertainty? I wanted to have some control over where I was going to live and where I was going to do. So it was kind of just that realization that, okay, it's kind of a young man's game, too. I mean, people don't realize that physically it's, you know, when you're 40 and you're the second oldest guy in your unit and you're running around with 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds and 21-year-olds, it's enough to say, okay, and you're like, hey, you know, I still work out, so I like the PT, but the reality is it can be pretty demanding from a physical standpoint. So between that, the idea of maybe it was just time, and the family pressure, I just felt like it was time to go. I had a good career. I loved what I did. Enjoyed it. I don't admit this to many people, but, you know, there were more than a few tears shed at my farewell, not by the people I was leaving, but by me, you know, they're all like good riddance. But it was pretty emotional because I made a decision. I knew what I wanted to do, but it was still tough to leave. You know, if you like soldiering, you like soldiers, you like the mission, you appreciate the Army. I mean, it's a tough choice to make, but it was time.
Yeah. Now, so were you financially ready when you when you made that leap?
No way. Not in the least. Having lived overseas so long, we didn't, when we moved to Colorado, we'd rented a house. We didn't buy a house, and I didn't know where I was going to stay and didn't want to get into that challenge. But, I was a first hard with three kids, and even though that's decent money, 15 years ago, it wasn't awesome money. And, so it really, really, was always tight. You know, wife worked, I worked, and you want to give your kids, you know, every advantage you can give them. But we didn't have a stockpile of money saved up. We were fortunate. We had enough to make the change, make the leap. We did leave mostly debt free. I was driving two used cars. They weren't super used, but they weren't new either. They were 5 and 6 year old cars that we'd bought and paid cash for. So we didn't have a lot of debt, and that was important. Not having a ton of credit card debt or anything like that. So we had the ability to make the leap. And when we did, we bought a house when we moved that was well under what we could afford intentionally, just to make sure we didn't become house poor. Because at that time, I had one going to college and then two still in high school. And it was like, college is one challenge, but even understanding all the other expenses that go around with it, it's quite the challenge. So, no, we were not ready. But I was going to a job that was going to pay me more than I made in the military. So that was a nice plus. Plus, honestly, the thing that really helped me with the transition is I used every bit of terminal leave I had. I knew when I was getting out that I'd saved. So I actually was double dipping from late July all the way to the 1st of November.
Nice.
So that made a big difference in transition. I mean, I didn't consume my leave and all that stuff. I used every bit of permissive TDY and leave that I had to bridge that gap. So I got out and started working for a civilian company at the same time I was drawing an Army paycheck for the last few months. That was a big, big bonus.
Hmm. Yeah, I managed to get away with doing that for a couple months, but definitely didn't have, as many years of raked up leave as that.
Yeah, you could only keep like 90 days or something, but I had every bit of 90 days plus, so it was important, and it helped,
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You told me before about your five-finger plan. you wanna go over that one again?
Yeah, so I had this huge fear when I was going to retire. I had watched people that I respected and admired, who I thought had really outstanding military careers but didn't do anything to prepare to get out, especially enlisted guys. Mm-hmm. And they were, first sergeants or sergeant majors who couldn't find a job that was ready for them, or they were ready for. And so they end up doing jobs they hated. And one guy that was driving a truck, a delivery truck, and I just thought, this guy has so much to offer, yet he couldn't find a position that warranted to use his experience to earn the kind of living I thought he was capable of. And so I made it a priority when I was in the military. Like I said, I was going to college before I joined the military, ran out of food, money, and ideas in the first Great Recession of 80, 81, and made it a point while I was in the military, even over a course of a 20-year career, I worked my way through 3 degree programs. So as a specialist, I ensured I finished an associate's degree. And that's not something you go and get 3 classes a night for every week. I mean, some semesters I didn't go to school because I was in the field too much. Mm-hmm. So you had to make concessions. I mean, I was, a scout leader. I was coaching kids in sports. And you just had to balance all that and do all those things. So I worked my way through 3 degrees, got my bachelor's, and got my master's. But when I got my master's, I wasn't sure what I wanted it in, and there was an opportunity to get it in education. And I always thought that was one of the things I was very interested in, is working in public education. So you talk about the five-finger plan. It's really simple. I really wanted 5 distinct paths that I thought I could go down and that I would pursue all of them simultaneously, and whichever one panned out, there I'd have a job. So the first one was obviously military contract aviation maintenance. there is work to be done if you want to do the travel, and particularly the way the military uses contractors worldwide to support operations. And I did interview with a couple companies after I had the job offer with John Deere and did have an offer from one of the companies, and it would have been a contract maintenance position working in Saudi Arabia. But my point is that was clearly a path I think I was qualified for. Another one was to go down the public education path. So I had the master's in education, thought work my way kind of a troops to teachers process, work my way into a public teaching position. I have a lot of passion for that topic, and so that was finger number two. Finger number three was to go into some kind of manufacturing or operational process. That's kind of where I ended up originally. Finger number four was the go the DA civilian route. Go work your way into the Department of Army civilian workforce and work in logistics or aviation maintenance operations. There's a number of jobs in a variety of directorates that they hire people. And so that was kind of the fourth one. And the fifth one is what I call the wild card. Heck, I didn't know what it was, but I knew I was going to have a job. So, you know, let's see what happens, what pans out. So I literally had five resumes all targeted for those kinds of activities and was really simultaneously pursuing all of those. But as it turned out, I ended up getting the job before I even retired. So I did at one point, after I was given the job offer, John Deere had announced some layoffs, and I was in contact with the general manager on a regular basis. Every month we had a phone call, and I said, so just to clarify, I see in the paper we're laying people off. Do I still have a job? And he got a little offended and said, what, are you not taking the job? I said, no, I'm asking, do I still have a job, because you're laying people off, yet I've got this job offer out here. He said, no, I made you a job offer. We shook on it. You've got a piece of paper that's as good as gold. Okay. But I, not knowing anything about the organization, I thought, oh, I better go out and hedge my bet. So I was still interviewing with companies as I was getting ready to retire. And like I said, I did a couple interviews with defense with aviation firms and defense contracting firms. And I had one firm job offer. I had a couple others I probably could have pursued a little bit more heavily. But since I already had a job in the bag, I didn't. You know, I turned down one. You know, they wanted to bring me back for a third interview, and I'm like, no thanks. And so that's kind of how the multi-fingered plan. I think when people put all their eggs in one basket, that's really dangerous. And I think the other thing is my family was willing to relocate for the work. So even though we love Colorado, I think I've mentioned before, you know, after I accepted the job from Deere, and I was worried, literally, I had a daughter as a senior in high school, was going to graduate, go to Colorado State, and now I turned her whole plan upside down and said, how about you go to school on the East Coast? Well, we'd already missed all the application deadlines, and we were also out of state. The other one was a junior going to become a senior, and that's the one I worried about most, and she's like, she was very honest. She's like, Dad, I'm going to go to high school for a year. I'll figure it out, and I'll be fine, and you and Mom have to do something to figure out what the rest of your life looks like, and that's more important. Pretty mature attitude kid for a 17-year-old.
Yeah.
And a funny side note, so we were living in a temporary apartment while we were waiting to close on our house right after I had taken the job, and I literally was at John Deere 2 weeks, and we were trying to figure out, okay, this was July, so school's coming up in August, and the middle child I was talking about said, you know, she'd played four instruments and had been in her band, active in different bands at school. So I want to play in the band last year, but I called the school, and they're actually doing, like, summer band camp right now. Can you guys drive me over and drop me off so I can find out if I can get in the band? Because I haven't got her address. I haven't even registered. So we drop her off with her four instruments. She says, I'll be fine. I'll call you in a couple hours if I need to be picked up. So wife drops her off and goes up and introduces herself to the band director and says, I'm here. I'm just moving from Colorado. I want to play. What do you need? Because I can play any of these four instruments I just brought with you. And so, well, put her in saxophone. She took that. So that was neat. That was like a Tuesday. And I came home Friday night from work. So I worked exactly two full weeks at John Deere. And there were five teenage girls in my living room eating pizza, saying, hi, Mr. Jasper. And I'm like, who are you people? And I don't know you. And she says, yeah, we're having pizza, then we're going to the movie. And I'm like, well, yeah, she's figured it out. I mean, she's been here exactly a week and a half, and she's having a sleepover with five kids, and they're going to a movie and having pizza in my living room. I'm like, I don't know. It just kind of shows the resilience of kids when they're kind of raised that way. They just fall in and fit in where they're at. And so I think sometimes we don't give kids enough credit that they can really be pretty tough and resilient. And you got to be, you know, it's a family choice, obviously, but we were pretty convinced that getting a good job was better than getting a job in a certain geographic region.
Mm-hmm. So. You know, you kind of, you mentioned it as you were going there, and I've written about it on the webpage as well. I just wanted to highlight that you said for each one of your five options, you had a resume for each one of those.
I did.
And this is, yeah, and I told guys, like, it's not lying. You're just emphasizing a different aspect of mm-hmm. your skills and qualifications for the job that you are applying.
Keyword search. A lot of companies are using electronic resume screening. So if you're going to submit a resume for a job and it doesn't match enough keywords, you're not even going to come to the top of the pile. Though, I mean, the resume piece is really a crapshoot. Your best chance to get a good job is network, network, network. Talk to everybody you know that you've ever separated, everybody that you had a good relationship with, and find out where they're working, what are they doing, what are the opportunities they see, and make those connections. I mean, obviously, my point is I was introduced to a job that I didn't even know existed by a guy who was a former commander of mine. I was his first sergeant, and he'd actually separated as a it's kind of a JMO, got out as a captain, went to Harvard's MBA program, and he was interning with the company. So he was not actually fully employed with Gender. He was interning with the company, had a good relationship with the general manager. They got to talking. General manager asked him a question. I'm looking for some guys to do these kinds of things, and my name comes up, and next thing you know is I get a phone call out of the blue, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's the network. So maintaining strong relationships and having those conversations, keeping up with people. And now it's even easier with Facebook and LinkedIn and everything else. If you're not maintaining those relationships, you're really closing a lot of doors.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any other I saw you in your paper here, you wrote some quick tips about making sure you get all the certifications and other applicable training that you can.
I think you know, if you're going to get out, and how do you turn your military experience into some kind of applicable civilian? If there's things that you're interested in doing and there's an applicable civilian certification or plan, pursue that while you're in if you can. Meaning, for an example, as an aviation maintainer, getting an FAA airframe power plant AMP mechanic license, pretty important. It doesn't prevent you from getting a job because you can work on defense aircraft, but you can't work on civilian aircraft without that certification. If you're really into IT and you want to work in the IT business, well, get some certifications, get some qualifications, get something on paper to help plus up your resume. If you've attended other classes outside of your college studies, whether it's leadership training or safety-related training, you know, document that, get that stuff so that you can show that you can show the applicability to your point of, you know, if people have not served in the military and they don't really understand what it is, they have a hard time connecting the dots between what you do in the military and what they're expecting you to do as a civilian.
You mentioned here also about being willing to take an entry-level job, and I've mentioned it as well. And you know, we didn't collude with that. You just put it in yourself. So I'm interested to see, you know, your thought process behind it as well.
I think sometimes people hold out for I laugh about that Christmas Lampoon vacation where, you know, just because Eddie's been unemployed for 7 years, he's holding out for a management position. I think sometimes people have this expectation that they got to go out and get. I was working with a retired, getting ready to retire, 05, and he wanted a job that was equivalent to his 05 kind of background and experience. And I thought, you know, you might have been in charge of 600 people, But no one's going to give you a well, maybe someone will give you a company out here, a small company or whatever. But how do you get yourself in a position where if you get yourself in the door, your skills and background will, in fact, lead you to new opportunities? In the 14-plus years I've been with Deere, I've actually had 6 jobs. And I've only asked for one of those. The other 5, somebody's asked me to come do.
Yeah. Right?
So not saying that that's awesome and well and wonderful, but pretty much people have gone, hey, Ed, I've got this thing we need done. Are you willing to go do it, right? And you can say no, but if you want to look for how do you find make yourself valuable, is get yourself in the door of a firm that you have a good fit with, and then let your skills and experience build your credibility and create those opportunities for you. I think that sometimes people hold out and they say, I have to have X amount of salary, or I want this kind of authority, and I think sometimes, you know, okay, so if the company offers you a warehouse supervisor job, okay. It's really funny that there are, at John Deere today, there are 4 people that work for John Deere out of my last unit of 85 guys. None of us came through with each other. I mean, we all came to the company at slightly different times. None of us helped each other. It was none of that. It just kind of, we all landed here. And yet, they've all progressed through the organization in their different paths and have received promotions and are moving up through the organization. And 2 of them are enlisted, 2 of them are officer. Right? So, it just kind of tells you that. And I mean, this is just people that I've kept track of that I know of, and you know, we talk on a semi-regular basis. And I mean, 2 of them were pilots, and 1 was a platoon sergeant, and 1 was the first sergeant. And we've all landed in the same company, but yet doing dramatically different things in a very large organization. I just think it's important to get the other thing is you don't want to be unemployed too long. I think, you know, if you come out of the military and you spend a year looking for a job, you know, people want to ask a question, why aren't you getting hired? What's going on? They start questioning that. So, you know, having something lined up as you get out is pretty important, not only for your psyche, but just from your overall employability. And if you made a wrong choice, you know, give it 18 months and then go find another thing. But then you're not coming out of the military. You're leaving a civilian firm that you have a chance to then build on that.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, I told your 05 example is a great one, because, you know, like you are very experienced in leading troops. You know very little about the business. You know, you can't come into John Deere and run a factory because you don't know about the customer. You don't know about factory operations, you know, material presentation and flow, labor laws, UAW contract stuff, you know, all the things that are required for a factory manager to be effective. Leadership is one of them, and that one is the hardest one to teach. You can learn all the other stuff pretty quick, and you're evidence of that. Every 2 years, someone else is coming knocking at you because you've got the skills that are hardest to teach, but you have to know some other stuff before you can get the next one.
I've told other people that when they've separated, I think the thing that separates some of the active duty or retired military that are getting out and doing it is the ability to take a simple concept, turn it into an actual plan, and then go execute it. You know, that sounds really like, well, everybody can do that. No. Trust me, not everybody can do that. And if you've spent any time in the military, you probably, whether you were a squad leader or a platoon leader or the first sergeant or the battalion commander, you really are taking the commander's intent, turning that into some kind of actionable plan, or expected to go do something with that, and then document or at least prove that you've accomplished your task or mission.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really simple, but it turns out it's really complicated for a lot of people. They don't have that background. They're not cut that way. And so that's where I think a lot of the folks that come from the military back in the civilian world are able to distinguish themselves because they know that they can get something done. They can accomplish a task. Their say-do ratio is very high. If they say something, they're going to do it. You know, they follow through. And it's not everybody, but most people that have successfully served in the military come out with that kind of can-do attitude, and not about why they can't do something. It's about why can we do something. And that's a really that's a trait people are really looking to, and a skill set people are willing to hire for. But you got to get in the door.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what it is. No, I really like that your say-do ratio is very high, and that's the first time I've heard that. So thanks for that. Ed, do you have any other further closing comments, anything else you'd like guys to know that you think would be worthwhile?
I think I got two things I think I'd mention. One is when you get to your first opportunity, your first job, find a mentor if you can. Find somebody who's former military that's been in the organization who can help navigate some of the minefields for you to be a sounding board. For the first, it's a bit of a culture shock. When I literally left Fort Carson on a Thursday, drove across country in 2 days, got in an apartment on Sunday, and then started work on Monday. And I came home, I think, Monday and Tuesday night, the first 2 days of my job. And I think I used the words, what the hell have I done? Because I didn't know the language. I didn't know what people, they were using words and acronyms. I had no idea what they were talking about. I didn't understand the business. I mean, not really. And I had an undergraduate in business, and that's fine. But it's the nuances of the business. So I was very fortunate that one of my bosses early in my career was actually a drilling reservist and had been active duty and then moved himself into the reserve. But he was great as a sounding board for I'm asking questions about how things work. He was helping me connect dots in a way that was really meaningful for me to go, oh, okay, I get how that works. So I think that's key number one. Find a mentor that you can, even if you can't find in your own organization, go out just like one of these, you know, web pages and find people who have got some experience and reach out. It doesn't make you stupid. It just means that we don't know. We're not exposed to the things that people are talking about. So that's really important. The other thing I would tell you is don't second guess your decision once you've made it. I've met some folks who have said, well, boy, I wish I'd stayed or I wish I'd done that. You know, okay, you can't do anything about it, whether you separated earlier, you did a full career and retired, but you can do something about your next choice. So what's the next choice? What's the next decision you're going to make? Don't just sit there and kind of say, well, I made a bad decision, now what? If it didn't work out, you know what? Make another one. Find another job. Be aggressive. Right. Find another opportunity within the same organization. I don't think you have to settle. You can be aggressive and move on. I think those are two things that we do, that former military members do well, but it's a chance to really drive their life in a different direction. So
I agree. Awesome. Well, thanks a lot, Ed, and I hope everybody enjoys.
All right, man.
Thanks.
Appreciate you putting this together. We'll see how it goes.
All right.
Talk to you later.